This is DomesticPreparedness.com. Since 1998, Domestic Preparedness has been a source of solutions for the professional preparedness community. Your host today is the managing editor, John Morton.
This podcast interview is sponsored by TVI Corporation. Mobility, protection, response. TVI Corporation is the manufacturer of rapid deploy shelter systems, solutions for decontamination, isolation, infection control, surge capacity, plus command control. For more information, visit www.tvicorp.com.
Domestic Preparedness is today with James Lee Witt, the CEO of James Lee Witt Associates, a crisis management and preparedness services consulting firm based here in Washington, D.C. He is also currently a special advisor to Louisiana Governor Kathleen Blanco to assist her in the Hurricane Katrina recovery, and we'll talk a little bit about that shortly. Mr. Witt has over 25 years of disaster management experience, culminating in his appointment as the director of FEMA, where he served from 1993 to 2001. During his tenure, he oversaw more than 350 disasters and was credited with turning FEMA into an internationally lauded all-hazards disaster management agency. In 1996, President Clinton elevated FEMA to cabinet status, which was a first for a FEMA director. James Lee, it's an honor. Thanks for taking time to chat with us today.
You're welcome. Looking forward to it.
Well, let's talk about your overview as a former FEMA director. You came to FEMA in 1993 after having served as the director for the Arkansas Office of Emergency Services, as well as a county judge who had oversight over disaster operations, and you also served on the Nuclear Response Board. You were the director of the Office of Emergency Services, I think, for 4.5 years. So I'm interested in how those experiences shaped your approach as a FEMA director.
We, director in Arkansas, as most directors across the country in every state, we had the opportunity to work with FEMA in many different ways. Particularly in Arkansas, we had one of the 8 arsenals in the United States when they just started the chemical emergency stockpile program of burning all those agents. So I actually held the first exercise in Arkansas that was a full-scale exercise of federal, state, and local, 1,500 people involved in the exercise and doing the training and the exercise scenario as well as managing that exercise and participating in it. It was invaluable because you look at that and then you look at an all-hazard concept and it helps you to be better prepared for whatever you may face. But also as director, we had in the 4.5 years, we had 3 presidential disaster declarations in our state. And so it gave me an insight of FEMA's programs from top to bottom. And then, of course, we had the New Madrid earthquake fault line across Arkansas that also we worked through a CSIP, a consortium that covered the New Madrid and working with the FEMA's earthquake program. And I actually got, for the very first time in Arkansas, legislation passed for seismic building codes for earthquakes. So I had an opportunity to work pretty much in every single program within FEMA, from the National Flood Insurance Program to response recovery programs to earthquake programs to, so pretty much all of them.
Yeah. Well, I wanted to ask, actually, in view of that, that your experience in emergency management at the state and local level, you had expertise in integrating the community-based disaster management with a national emergency management strategy. Now, I guess the question there would be, do you see that process as primarily a top-down or a bottom-up process, and who would have the accountability to make that so?
Well, I think one of the most important things, for our nation as a whole is that it's not a top-down system. It's a partnership. It's been able to bring together the people within the states and local governments as a partner with the national programs. I think it was important when we looked at the federal response plan, We looked at all 22 or 28 federal agencies involved with the Red Cross, and in refocusing the federal response plan, adding a terrorism component on that. But we created what we call ESF functions. Mm-hmm. That was for each of the federal agencies. And then working with the states, then they were able to mirror their plans and create the same ESF functions in those states, that when you had an event that you were responding to, then it was a partnership in mm-hmm. that response. And I think that is absolutely critical, because the federal government is therefore as a resource through these functions. Mm-hmm. And having that in line with each other, then it makes a big difference in your capability.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, when you were the FEMA director, you were responsible for response and recovery operations for 6 of the most 10 devastating disasters ever in the U.S., including the most costly flood disaster in the nation's history, the most costly earthquake, and a dozen damaging hurricanes. Now, have those experiences informed your thoughts on FEMA organization and reorganization today?
Very much so. I was very concerned about the fact that when they created the Department of Homeland Security, they combined the 22 federal agencies and 180,000 people under one cabinet secretary, and basically created the functions within the Homeland Security that FEMA was so prepared to do and was doing such a good job at, from preparedness training and exercising and the response recovery portion of the federal government supporting the states. It minimized their ability to do that. I met with the White House for a couple of hours when they were looking at creating the Department of Homeland Security. They asked me to come over, and I did, White House staff, and they said, "What do you think it should look like?" And I said, "Well, the president and the country needs something functional today." Mm-hmm. And I said, I would take the INS, the Border Patrol, the Coast Guard, the intelligence gathering and analysis, and I'd make that the foundation of Homeland Security the first year to make it where it can be functional." Mm-hmm. And working with the states and local governments and public safety across the board, I said, "You combine this many agencies and this many people under one cabinet secretary, you will have difficulty making it functional in 10 years."
Mm-hmm.
So we have what we have.
Yeah. Now, in terms of preparedness, you're a strong believer in preparedness as a cost-effective strategy to reduce costs on the back end of a disaster. Now, as also has often been said, the training and exercise component of preparedness allows the exchange of business cards in advance of an event. Now, while director, you initiated Project Impact, which was an innovative disaster prevention program that was implemented in over 240 communities to make the communities at the local level disaster resistant. Now, with all that in mind, do you think FEMA is optimally organized and resourced for the preparedness component?
I think that since last July, moving preparedness training and exercise back under FEMA out of Homeland Security, I think it will give Director Paulson an opportunity to build that capability to the level that it needs to be again. I think that over that period when they were organizing Homeland Security, it minimized FEMA and its 10 regions the mm-hmm. capability to do this with the states and local governments. And my hope is, and I know Director Paulson and FEMA is working on this, but my hope is that they will build that capacity back to the level it needs to be. Project Impact was a program that we started because I was trying to work with the states and local governments to get out of this damage, repair cycle that we saw so many times mm-hmm. in disasters. And basically it came out of the 1993 flood, where we did put in place a buyout relocation of property that was in the 100-year floodplain that had been destroyed or devastated, which worked very well. And because when we did this, it was on a voluntary basis. And then in 1995, we had another flood in the same area, and we did not spend one taxpayer's dollars on response because there was no mm-hmm. damage.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so Project Impact concept came out of those mitigating circumstances of identifying, and assessing what worked, what didn't work, and how could we move this forward in the future. It was creating a program in high-risk communities, helping them, saying, identify your risk, develop a plan to minimize that risk. We will help you with some seed money and help you build a public-private partnership around that plan. Mm-hmm. And we would go to those communities, have a big news event with these partners signing on, working, and it brought people together that never worked together, from Chamber of Commerce to small business to corporations. And when we left, we had over 2,500 corporate and business partners across the country. Mm-hmm. NASCAR was a partner. Kenny Irwin was our spokesperson. Mm-hmm. They were passing out prevention pamphlets to NASCAR fans at every NASCAR race.
Really?
And so, it was helping communities to help themselves.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Oakland, California was a Project Impact community, and we had the big El Nino summit because El Nino was going to be hitting that year, and nobody had really focused on preparing for El Nino. Oakland, through this public-private partnership in Oakland, did adopt a drain program where on each block mm-hmm. they had a volunteer that they gave a rake and a shovel and a rain suit to keep that drain open to keep it from flooding.
Wow.
They saved millions of dollars because they had no floods from El Nino.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the kind of things that worked.
Wow. That's sort of like a fire warden in the London
Blitz.
Exactly.
Fantastic. Exactly.
In the second segment, I'd like to talk a little bit about Katrina recovery. As the special advisor to Governor Blanco, how are you exactly assisting her in the recovery, and how's it going?
We were hired by the state of Louisiana to help and support the State Office of Emergency Services in Louisiana in working with the parishes in project work orders and project in the short, long-term recovery, doing the mitigation grant management of those programs for the long-term recovery efforts. We're pretty much like the state arm working with them because, you can have a catastrophic event. They did not have enough people or particularly trained, experienced people to mm-hmm. deal with all aspects of this. And so what we've been able to do, we hired, we worked with Governor Blanco in creating legislation, creating a Department of Emergency Management in Louisiana that was passed by the legislators. And because the emergency management was under the National Guard.
Mm-hmm.
And then they also identified positions and funded positions for the Department of Emergency Management for Louisiana. So what we did working with them, we hired about 65 local people.
Mm-hmm.
And we trained those local people in these programs over mm-hmm. 12 months.
Mm-hmm.
We hired them at the state rates, and then we transferred those people to those
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
positions for the state emergency management. And what we're doing is trying to help them get schools rebuilt, fire departments rebuilt, infrastructure rebuilt through the funding systems of the Stafford Act through FEMA, and making sure that they not only do it well and documented well, but they get reimbursed, and that they don't have to worry about fear of the IG or auditors coming back deobligating funds for them, and so it's been a tough thing. We've had a lot of people down there for some time, but it's starting to change, and our hope is that it will speed up mm-hmm. soon.
Now, in terms of both dollars and programs, existing or otherwise, what should be the level of the national commitment to recovery in Louisiana and the Gulf Coast?
I think the president and I think Congress has made an unbelievable commitment in funds, for the Gulf Coast recovery efforts from Mississippi to Louisiana to Texas and Alabama and all of them. It's the process that no one's ever dealt with an event of that magnitude mm-hmm. in our nation, It's just the decision-making process of moving it forward is complicated, and which needs to be streamlined. But I think that commitment's there and, mm-hmm. and has been, and I don't see that it has waned any at all over mm-hmm. the last 2 years.
Now, what about the private sector, including the NGOs and charities? Should the government further incentivize the private sector to assist?
I don't know about the government on a national level doing that. I think that that should come from the state with the VOAD organizations within that state. Mm-hmm. They have a good system set up state by state through VOAD, which is inclusive of mm-hmm. all of the volunteer organizations within that state. I think the American Red Cross, each of the chapters within those states, you know, they need to be more including in that planning, preparedness, and particularly sheltering, identifying those shelters and making sure that they are the type of shelters that can deal with an evacuation. I think that if you give them an incentive as a partner to go into this, in reality, you will create a stronger system.
Mm-hmm.
As far as funding something as an NGO, I think they should look at some type of a reimbursable that would cover food, water, mm-hmm. you know, this type of thing, which I think they have in some cases. But, you know, it's important. The volunteers are absolutely critical
mm-hmm.
in a response. And I think if it's some way that they're supportive in a way that makes it even better, that's good.
This is more of a response question, but I guess it would carry over to recovery. Let's zoom down from the 30,000-foot level. As I told you earlier, our guys and gals with the Don Prep community are the boots-on-the-ground folks. And one question that always comes to mind over managing and credentialing volunteers is the instances where some charities who were right there in the response were either turned away or misdirected. It's not so much a problem in the recovery phase, but do you have any thoughts on how to do this better?
That's all part of the planning,
mm-hmm.
and that's all part of the exercising and the training. I think the biggest problem we have is there's not enough money through that program to be able to put together a credentialing program, a training program, and an exercise program to be able to be where we need to be today. And that program has suffered over the last 4 or 5 years simply because it was not under FEMA, it was under Department of Homeland Security.
Mm-hmm.
Now that it's back, my hope is that they'll fund that in a way that the regions, the FEMA's 10 regions, can work closer with the states like they used to through a partnership
mm-hmm.
and the NGOs. And now a lot of states has already pre-credentialed people that need to be in a response and recovery mm-hmm. operations. We've even taken it a step further now through higher education. We've even gotten like Cal State University Systems in California, which has 23 campuses. We've even gotten the universities now to working with the California State Office of Emergency Services to provide credentials with the state logo
mm-hmm.
and the university logo
mm-hmm.
with the ID photo says emergency worker
mm-hmm.
For these universities. Because once something happens, then that yellow tape goes around. Mm-hmm. It's difficult to mm-hmm. get in. So, mm-hmm. So we've already started that process with higher education, which I think is, and Chicago is mm-hmm. another good example. Mm-hmm. In Chicago First, working through the private sector and public safety, they've pre-credentialed people
mm-hmm.
that need to be in those areas, which for NGOs and everybody, it's absolutely critical.
Mm-hmm. In this third segment, let's turn to recent FEMA reorganization, because you've mentioned that through the interview. The reorganization didn't restore the agency's independent cabinet status, although the president may call the FEMA administrator to serve as a cabinet member during disaster. So it's still an agency within a department focused on a terrorist threat as opposed to a Katrina-style emergency. Do you see this working, or will the agency need further reconfiguration?
My hope is that, you know, I don't think it's going to happen within the next year and a half, but my hope is whoever comes in with the new administration and that Congress as well look at this and do a review of Homeland Security and the functions and the missions and FEMA. Of course, you know, my preference would be that FEMA become an independent agency cabinet level, simply because of their mission and their role and responsibility is to coordinate federal resources to support state and local government. And I think that is absolutely critical. But I think they have to do it as an all-hazard concept, not mm-hmm. just for terrorism or not just for natural disasters. It has to be an all-hazard focus. Can Homeland Security and FEMA work together in that approach? Absolutely. Mm-hmm. But I think you go back to the crisis consequence management side of it. You know, the crisis management side of it, when we set up the terrorism program mm-hmm. in 1995 or 96, was that the law enforcement component of this mm-hmm. was handled by Justice, the crisis management. Mm-hmm. FEMA did the consequence management side mm-hmm. of it, mm-hmm. which I think they have to, I would look at that approach again mm-hmm. in a way that it would give Homeland Security a very clear mission, and it would give FEMA a very clear mission with its each with their roles and responsibilities and how mm-hmm. it worked. That's what I would do.
Mm-hmm. Now, the FEMA reconstitution puts the agency budget authority into one organizational stovepipe. Now, will it have the kind of budget clout it would have as a separate department with solely a consequence management mission?
I don't think so. I would hope that it would. It, you know, when I met with Congress on many occasions and I was, you know, they were asking me my thoughts and I shared with them, I said FEMA needs its own budget. It needs to be an autonomous of Homeland Security, so that funds are not taken from one program to another and given to another program within the Homeland Security or vice versa. I think it's important that they have done that. My hope is they'll fund it to the level that needs to be funded now so that they can physically do those responsibilities that they have now that was back that put back under FEMA. Mm-hmm. You know, we'll just have to wait and see.
Well, the FEMA director does not direct, but only oversees the federal emergency support for mitigation, preparedness, response, and recovery. While Mr. Paulson may have a direct advisory role with the President for Emergency Management, similar to the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff at DOD, his reporting lines still go through the DHS Secretary. So in terms of response, timely, effective response, has he got the authority he needs?
I think with the changes they made, And if they will empower the director of FEMA to fulfill that role and responsibility, then it could work. And I'm not internal, you know, I'm not there and I'm not within the internal decision process of how they're doing things right now. But it's absolutely essential that the director of FEMA have the authorization to be able to make the decisions without having to go up through a chain of command, waiting on a decision process. It just does not work. Mm-hmm. It will not work when you have to make a decision very quickly, tasking other federal agencies to be able to provide the resources very in a timely way. It's important that that director is empowered to do that.
Mm-hmm.
The decision process at this time and Katrina, I think, was complicated. I think it caused some serious problems. But I'm hopeful with these changes that will fix that.
Well, I have an interesting comparison here with HHS. Last year, Congress also drove a reorganization for HHS, which included the stand-up of Craig Vanderwagen's shop, the Office of the Assistant Secretary for Preparedness and Response, ASPR, A-S-P-R. We've discovered it's a very good model where requirements, budget, and program authority and operational control are all in one person, mm-hmm. Admiral Vanderwagen. And now, is something like that possible or desirable for FEMA?
I don't, I'm not sure if it's desirable. I think it is a good model, and he's a very good man, very capable. You know, I guess it's yet to be seen how it will work, but I know that when I was there, HHS was an integral part and partner of mm-hmm. everything we did, particularly mm-hmm. in the emergency medical and mm-hmm. and that side of it. And I was glad to see that they put the emergency medical functions back under HHS. I think that's the right place for it. And my big concern right now is whether or not they're going to fund it.
Mm-hmm.
Because as you know, across our nation, the emergency medical preparedness is really suffering.
Yeah.
And as a nation, I don't think we're ready to meet those challenges if we have a major emergency medical challenge. Mm-hmm. I just don't think we're there.
Now, how do you feel about the current direct structure in FEMA, assistance, operations, logistics, mitigation, and so forth?
Well, you know, it's what Director Paulson feels he's comfortable with and will work within the system he has now. And if he's comfortable with it and thinks he can build it, you know, since it's been all put back to, mm-hmm. under him, then, you know, I trust his judgment. I think he'll make the right call.
Mm-hmm. Now, has sufficient authority been pushed out to FEMA's 10 regional offices? And if so, are the states developing stronger relationships with their regional POCs?
I think Director Paulson has been pushing more through the regions than down to the states. But I think what's going to help him is the preparedness training and exercise function back under him, because that gives the region an opportunity to reach out and partner with those states, you know, much more as far as on a day-to-day, you know, month to month. And I know you just don't want to meet the fire chief at the scene of a fire the first time. And, mm-hmm. and I think that's been problematic over the last 5 years. And so I think that my hope is that they will have a stronger relationship with the states. I know the 8 years I was there, the region was an integral part of every state and local emergency management, and fire and public safety across the board. And I think it's very important. And those relationships are critical.
In this last segment, I'd like to talk about the National Response Plan. And I've got some tough questions, two final ones. The NRP mantra is that federal agencies do not lead state and local authorities in a response to a disaster. Rather, they support them only after a state makes a formal request. Now, in light of Katrina, a monster which overwhelmed the state and local response, do you see disasters ahead that will be of such magnitude that the response must be of necessity federal-led? And if so, should it be FEMA or DOD or any other entity?
I don't think any response should be federal-led. I think the federal government should be the resource to support state and local governments. I think it's important that it is FEMA. Mm-hmm. I know when we were there, DOD was an integral part of our response when we needed them.
Mm-hmm.
I had a full colonel as my liaison in my office, worked with me, you know, every day on policy issues and how we could respond better together. Coast Guard, all of them. So, you know, DOD was there as a resource and support. And what was interesting, DOD's, and when I went over to Pentagon and rebuilt relationships with FEMA and DOD, they said, "You, Director, you give us the mission, we'll take care of it for you."
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we want to do.
Mm-hmm.
And it worked extremely well. I can't say enough good things about DOD mm-hmm. and what they did for us. And I think that is the role they would like to play and would like to do. I don't think they want to be in charge of it. They told me, "We don't want to be in charge. You tell what to do and we'll take care of it." So I think FEMA needs to maintain that status of the federal agency that coordinates federal resources. I think it's absolutely critical.
Sir, I wonder if you have any closing thoughts. I know that you and Admiral Loy have your Protecting America initiative. If you want to leave us with some thoughts about that and what you all are doing.
Admiral Loy and I are working on helping states to pass legislation to create a catastrophe fund in each state. The reason we're doing this is we have seen over the past local governments and individuals having a very difficult time recovering from disaster events. And what's happened is that in hurricane risk areas, earthquake risk areas, these higher risk areas, you're seeing the insurance market pulling out of those areas. And our concern is that the federal taxpayers cannot continue to be the treasurer of recovering in these communities. We need more people insured. We need more insurance available that's affordable and lower deductibles, because if we get more insurance across the board for people, then the faster the recovery effort's going to be. So what we're trying to do is work with these states to set up a catastrophe fund in the states that reinsurance funds that normally the industry would pay out to do the reinsurance go into this fund in that state. The existing premium dollars that are paid, take a percent, not raise the premium cost, but take a percentage of that and put it into this fund. That would be managed by the governor and the legislators. And that as the fund grows, that whatever percentage they say, 20, 30% of that fund, then would be a grant program back to local governments to do mitigation, prevention, public awareness, public education, and first responder funding. We have about 150 coalition members now, and we have legislation that's going to be introduced in some states. We are also pushing, and Chairman Barney Franks has this under his committee, to create a national catastrophe fund. And I think Senator Clinton has come out supporting that publicly, and Governor Romney's coming out supporting that publicly. But the national fund would be created, catastrophe fund be created. If a state had a fund, they were hit by a disaster, their catastrophe fund was overwhelmed, they could draw off the national fund, and as their fund built back, then they could pay the national fund back.
Mm-hmm.
Because if we don't create a market for the insurance industry to be able to provide this coverage in these communities, then the cost of recovery efforts in these states and communities is going to get to the point that Congress and everyone else is going to start questioning, why aren't we doing something different?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you know, the federal programs like FEMA programs, when people get hit, if they don't have the coverage, insurance coverage, these programs are not designed to replace everything people loses.
Mm-hmm.
These programs are designed to help get a temporary roof over people's mm-hmm. heads and their families. You know, and we've got to do something different, and we've got to get this dialogue going, saying, you know, through this we can create stronger, better communities through building codes and enforcement, and get the insurance market back involved in this of making insurance available. It's getting to the point, if you live in a coastal community or you live in an earthquake risk area, it's getting very difficult for you to find coverage.
Mm-hmm.
If you find it, it's very expensive.
Mm-hmm.
Take California. Only 14% of the people in California have earthquake insurance. Think about that.
Mm.
It's available, but it's very expensive, and the deductible is so high that its deductible is $30,000. What happens if we have a major earthquake, which the probability is high we will? We just have to do something different. We have to get more people covered. We have to get more insurance available. And we think this is a way that we can do this and basically help the states and local communities, if they're hit, to recover much faster, particularly individuals.
James Lee, this has been great. I really thank you for your time. Most informative, and thank you as well for your service to our country.
I enjoyed it. Thank you.
This has been a Domestic Preparedness podcast interview. Thank you for listening.